We actually had this before once. I'll do it again over here. So we have to have Mizmor Samach Aleph. We did the first page on page 530. Okay, so I'll just read over here these psukim again. Lamatzech al neginas l'David for the conductor on the neginas. The neginas is a musical instrument. Shema Elokim Rinasi Hashem, listen to my rina, my song, Hakshiva Tefilasi, listen to my prayer, Mikseh Haaretz Elech Ekra, from the ends of the earth where I call out to you, Ba'atoif Libi, Ba'atoif Libi, when I envelop my heart, okay, I envelop my heart, so like a talus, you wrap yourself up, Bitsur Yorum Mimeni, when I wrap up my heart, when I'm dealing with a tzur, that is yorum mimeni tancheni. It's a difficult expression we learned yesterday, and you have to really read it backwards. When you, Hashem, guide me, when I am faced with a mighty rock, a situation that is, a tzur means something that's overwhelming, a rock, and in this case it means something that is beyond me. Yorum mimeni, that is, more exalted than me, a difficult, you know, it's a metaphor, a difficult situation, you Hashem Sancheni, you guide me through the situation. Pasuk Dalet, Ki Hayisi Machzel, because you Hashem, you were a refuge to me. Migdal Oiz, you are a tower of might, Mipnei Oiv, in the presence of the enemy. Agura Ve'oholcha, Oila Mim, I will dwell in your tent forever. Echse, I will seek refuge, b'sefer kinafech, in the concealment of your wings, selah forever. Okay, let's go over here at the Likut Eshas.
It seems that he does everything in a color like a red. Like he says, Shim'a, and then like Shiva.
Okay.
Shiva is stronger.
A stronger, hearken. It's more intense. A refuge.
Is
a very good. It's a bunker, a concrete reinforced bunker. Okay, very good. Okay, so let's see over here. It says in the Likutei Shas, Agura ve'olcha olam, may I dwell in your tent, forever. Okay, over here it says over here. What does that mean? Echsemasik refuge b'seisir k'nefecha, the concealment of your wings, selah forever. Amar Yehuda, Amar Rav, Ma'idach Siv, Agura Ve'olcha Olamim, V'chi Efshalo L'Adam Logur B'Shnei Olamim. It says here the word Olamim B'Loshan Rabim, two worlds. Is it possible for a person to live in two worlds? How could that be? El Amar Dov L'Fnei Kadosh Baruch Hu. This is the famous Chazal. Here's the Makar. This is a very important pasuk. What is the Makar? Amar Dov L'Fnei Kadosh Baruch Hu. Ribono Shel Olam, Yei Ratzon Sheyarmu Dvar Shmua Mipi B'Olam Hazeh. May it be that after I leave this world, people will say over in my name Devar Halacha. The Amar of Yochanan B'Shem Yechai Kol Talmud Chacham She'oimim Devar Shmua Mipiv Ba'olam Hazeh. Any Talmud Chacham that they say over in his name a Shmua Mipiv Ba'olam Hazeh in this world, Sif Soisav Dovivayis Ba'kever. This is the Makar of this very famous Halacha, that of a Talmud Chacham, he says Mechadesh Divrei Torah. And then when he leaves this world, the people that remain in this world, they continue to say over his words of Torah when he already left the world. He is still alive in this world. Even though his neshama is in the next world, Sif Soisav, his lips are murmuring in the grave. That means that there is some life. The only way the lips can murmur in the grave is if there's some signs of life in the grave. That means he's still in this world. His neshama is in the next world. Yet, his guf is also participating in this world. Okay, you would say that people, the people in this world, they're saying over, they are remembering him. He lives on. He lives on through his Divrei Torah. There's a lot of questions about this. First of all, the Parshas Shah David, where do we find, and David was Mechadesh Halacha. Today, David was the one that is the one who innovated this concept. He innovated this concept that I want to live in two worlds. Even after I die, I want to live on in this world through the principle of Sif Soisav Dovayis Ba'kever. And this he says in Divrei Torah. He says this only in Divrei Torah. It doesn't say this about Tefillah. He writes on Sheyoimu Dvar Shmua Mipi Bel Mazeh. Oh, so excellent. That's a very tough question. It doesn't say a Dvar Torah, a Dvar Shmua. This is a unique expression. Every word of Chazal, the nuances are amazing. A divar shemua. We always hear mechadesh divrei Torah, divrei halacha, lasuke shmeitz aliba de hilchasa, halacha Torah. There are other milchamta shel Torah. Here we have a new term, divar shemua. What is?
It's good advice. It's good insight.
A lesson. Exactly. A divar shemua. We typically hear this chazal. We hear this chazal. We typically say over if you say over divrei Torah, on a yard site. It's very common by talmidei chachamim on the yard site. They say over their chidush Torah. In Torah Vidas, they used to do this very often. In the middle of second seder, they would give a clap. Today is the yard site of this Rosh HaYeshiva. And Torah Vidas had a lot of Rosh HaYeshiva. A lot of who all, you know, were nifter, passed away many. And many of them, people don't even know who they are. They never even heard of them. But you know, there's a tradition. They had a tradition that on the yard site of this Rosh HaYeshiva, they would have a zikaron, and one of either the members of the kollel or someone from the family would come, and they would speak, and in order that some of these they passed away very very long time ago, so they're not going to go say over hespit, so they say over divrei Torah, and what do they say over? The best thing to say over is the chidushei Torah that these people were mechadesh. They wrote svarim. Okay, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky was Dibur, because he was a legend. And they would talk with Yaakov Kamenetsky, and I was Dibur, and his yard site, they would have at night, they wouldn't even have during, they had much more elaborate, more elaborate. Even that, it wasn't like a hesped. It was, they had either grandchildren, or they had someone from the family would come, and Elamash, they had a shir. They would say a shir in the Beis Medrash, and the shir would typically focus on his Chidush Torah. Why? This principle, Sif Soy Sof, his lips murmur. So what better way can you have his lips murmur than to say over his own chidushei Torah? That's the way we have been brainwashed. But that's not what it says in Chazal. It says in Chazal, a devar shemua. You know what that means? It means even a joke. A joke that has a lesson to it. There's some type of musa haskel. There's some type of message. And then when you say over that message, You remember the person. You think about the person, and there's the, it keeps them alive. It does not say here in this Chazal divrei Torah, a devar shemua, a message, something to take out of, something to listen to. It's a very powerful. I always tell you over this story. I tell you probably many many times just to repeat. Chazar is supposed to be a true story. A boy came to Moshe Feinstein in the yeshiva, and he told them that you know they're doing something in honor of someone, and they asked him to submit chidushei Torah, an article for a journal, some type of zikaron for a relative, and the younger man said to Rav Moshe, I don't have anything. I'm not on a level to be mechadesh Torah. Can you do me a favor? Can you give me one of your chidushei Torah? You have an infinite reservoir of Torah. Give me something, big deal, throw me a bone. Give me something you wrote I can put into the journal in my name. It's a true story, supposedly. So Moshe told him an incredible incredible lesson. It's a pillow what he told him. He said to him, let's be honest here. After time passes, I'm not going to be in this world anymore. And whatever. And there's going to be this journal lying around. I'm going to tell you a chiddush. And either it will be in my name, Moshe Feinstein, or it's going to be in your name. If it's in your name, what are the chances someone's going to read it? Zero, right? If it's in my name, this is what the story goes. Putting aside all humility, you know, I work very hard in my life. I have a reputation. And, you know, there's a possibility. There's much more of a possibility someone's going to read what my chiddush there. Rav Moshe told him, there's a principle in Chazal called Sif Soysov Dovois Bakever. And Rav Moshe said, I have no idea what that means. I'm not a mystic. I have no idea what that principle means. But I am not a Baal Habas to be Moichel on it. And if it's in my name, then there's a possibility it will be Niskayim Sif Soysav Dovais Bakever. If it's in your name, it's not going to happen. And I am not a Baal HaBayis to go and be Moichel on what Chazal say, so I'm not giving you anything. That's the story. You believe it, you don't believe it. There's a Musa Haskell in the story, whether it's true or not. Okay, so that's what...
And now you just said,
Just last, what I got the text this morning, I mentioned through Rabbanim at the beginning that it had a direct influence on my thought process in general. I mentioned it through Rabbanim. When I turned on my phone in the morning, he said, do you want me to mention their names? I said, absolutely, yeah.
Omer davar b'shem amray mevi geul. So there's another principle. Omer davar b'shem amray mevi geul lo olam. How does that correlate and interact with this chazal of sif soysav davis bakever? It's a different principle. Omer davar b'shem amray. Not a davar shmua. What is the chiluk between this? This ma'amar chazal and that ma'amar chazal? Sif soysav davis bakever versus by a dvar shmua ha'oimer dovar b'shem omroi.
This is what Rabbi Schwab mentions in Bayechi. He gives this explanation of sif soysav davis bakever when it says when Yaakov says Esa sher yigro eschem yachris hayomim. Why it's spelled with an aleph and not a hey? It should be a hey. What will happen? But he says it's with an aleph, because when you say something in the name, the message is, when you say something b'shem Omro, you have to say it b'shem Omro, because of this factor, and that's asher yikro astem. What made you who you are, so to speak? Es asher yikro astem. If you will remember the avos, if you remember all the things you learned, and mention these people, they become so familiar to everybody else, it's like they're still alive. So, Esa Shir Yikro Eschem Yachris Hayom. So, he says, it's with an aleph, calling out to them. It's not necessarily what happened, it's that way.
Very good. Excellent.
This is the Rabbi Schwab in the Mayim Beis HaShoeva.
Excellent. Wow, okay, that's... It's very interesting. Okay, so this is the famous Chazal to live in, but now also by the way over here it says, see, this is what gets us a little bit. It's called Talmud Chacham. Obviously, you see, this is the thing. It doesn't say a Dvar Torah, a Dvar Shemua, and it says a Talmud Chacham. And you know what? It sounds like the Talmud Chacham is saying over Dover B'Shem Omroi. A Shemua almost sounds like what the Talmud Chacham himself heard. Okay, you can play with it here and there. All right, but I asked you a question in the very beginning. How does this apply to David? David, if you learn Pashup Shad, a Talmud Chacham, a Dvar Shemua means words of Torah, are you aware of any Chidushei Torah that David was Mechadesh, that we say over in his name? Tehillim. Oh, so Tehillim Pashup Shad is not Torah. Tehillim is more Tefillah, it's Mizmorim, it's songs, it's Shevach Vahida. So the Gemara Taka says that David said to Hashem that I want it to be that my Tehillim should be equivalent to Chidushei Torah. We don't find if Hashem told him, Hashem says, yes, I will grant your request. We do not find Hashem answering that question. But David did make that request that Tehillim should be equivalent to Torah. And if that is the case, then there's probably no one more than it's Oimer Dovar B'Shei Dvar Shmua Talmud Chacham that they say. There's probably no one that's Sif Soysav Dovas B'Kevin more than David. The whole world is saying Tehillim continuously.
Even if it's not agreed that this is Torah, it's only this was all the Dvar Shmua.
Okay. So the Talmud Chacham, this is called at least called the Dvar Shmua. Even if you want to say that Hashem did not grant his request of that it should be considered Torah, Tehillim is at least called the Dvar Shmua. Exactly. And then you can probably say there is no one in the world whom you have
more
plagiarized than David. Tehillim is Tehillim. I mean, it's not just the Talmidei Chacham that are saying to every man, woman, and child is saying, Yidavin, every Davin, most of Davening is just copy-paste Tehillim. So David, Mamish, David said, Agura v'oholcha. You know, it's a very hard word to pronounce, because there is a meseg beneath the Aleph, which means that the emphasis goes on the Ohel, v'oholcha. The holcha in your tent.
The word Ohel is
right.
Sometimes you have the word na'ara.
Yeah.
You have also met it after the noon. To not say na'ar.
In Jewish language, by the way, the word ohel is a yotze min haklal. It's the only one that you actually pronounce it two syllables before the end. Ohel. Ohelo. It's ohelo.
Ohel, okay.
If it's three syllables, you just go back one. But here you go back two.
There are three syllables.
It's the only one.
You're going back. Take a step back. When people say there's milel milara. So milara, people say milara means you put the emphasis on the last syllable, and people make a mistake and they say that milael means you put the emphasis on the first syllable. That is incorrect, patently incorrect. Mila'el means on the second to last, not the first. It happens to be that many times there are only two syllables, so the second to last is the first. Ba'a. Many words have only two syllables, and when you do mila'el, so it happens to be that it's on the first syllable, but that's not correct. It's the second to last syllable. Memel, if you have a word that has three syllables, the emphasis is going to be on the middle. Now, in this word over here, how many there are? You know, to do laning, I don't do this anymore. No one wants me to teach laning. I was like, there are some hard words, and he asked the child, tell me how many syllables are in a word. Give me a number. So a word, let's say the word, agura. Three syllables. These kids, they swallow the words.
Right.
Tell me, give me a number. Take a word. Ha oretz. Ha oretz. Three syllables. Ha oretz. Where do you put the emphasis? On the aleph. Ha oretz. First, before you get to the mila el and the mila ra, give me a word and tell me the number of syllables. When you have a shva, is it a shva no, shva noch? And that's going to make a difference in the count of the syllables. The word. O la mim, three syllables. Where do you put the emphasis? Under the ayin. So it's O la mim. Now that's an example where you go. The truth is, in that word, there's a major emphasis.
To help with the pronunciation, because an ayin is a vowel, even though it's not really, but it's a vowel, and you would swallow it up if you put the accent on the O la.
Well, that depends on the on the chataf. That depends on the.
If you had said the ohol lomim, you would lose the ayin. So that's why it's pushing it back so that you say the ayin.
No, so go ochar. So you're saying right. There's no doubt. There's no question that the word the ohol cha, the according to the rules of grammar, it should be milara. It should be on the chaf.
Correct.
The reason, you just hit the answer, the reason why in this case it's unique is because of the principle called nosog ochor. Since the word ve'oholcha is followed by the word olamim, and in the word olamim, olam, the emphasis is on the ayin, So you cannot have two words back to back where the first word, the emphasis is on the end, and the second word, the emphasis is on the beginning. And we always, and therefore, since the word oylamim, oylam, you must put the emphasis on the ayin. Therefore, if we just had the word ve'oholcha, there is no question about it. The emphasis would be on, when you have a chaf, ohel, we all know, you have it on Tzimilaram, but when you have the chaf, it would be ve'oholcha. That's the way it always is in Chumash. When you ever have the possessive form, the emphasis goes on the last syllable. It's always like that. There's always going to be like a pashto. That's the way. But in this case, because the word which will be ve'oholcha is next to the word oylamim, you cannot have two accents back to back. That is a violation of the rules of grammar. So in this particular case, we shove it back. It's called in grammar, nosoig ochor, stand back, back up, back up. You go, remember the olden days, before there was easy pass, you had to stop to go to the tolls, and there were these big signs. Don't you dare back up. If you back up, you get points. Remember, they say back up, don't you dare back up. It's very dangerous to back up. When you come there and you stop, and they'll give you a ticket with points. Now no more, those days are gone. Now everything is automated. Everything, we live in a world of robots.
It's, you have this in Ketzer Mevorachim, when it explains how the reason for this, what he was talking about in the brachos, the way that we started. So the Gemara asked the question itself, how come you say lechem and min, and you make the motzi, it's mem and a mem, why doesn't it separate it at that point? Because even when you say lechem min, even though it's lechem, is at the beginning, it's milael, the word lechem, so it shouldn't be a problem, but you're still going to swallow the mem, but it says, because it's a new phrase, min haaretz is separate. But it's also, in terms of brachas, it's a yotzei min haklal also. Because they do it in other brachas, they add a hey to avoid swallowing the letter. But
okay.
You know, how come you don't do it by lechem min?
We have to learn grammar one day. Grammar is a whole world. It's a whole world. I have a very good book over here. I have over here a Reisman, who wrote a very beautiful Haskama. Reisman is heavily steeped in Diktuk, heavily steeped. And someone put out, Balabas put out a very good book, very thorough book. It's too complicated for me, but Reisman, he is a very beautiful Hakdama. I have it here on the Shabbat, I will show you during the break. It's a very impressive book. I thought it would be easy, but I started going through it and I got dizzy. But what I really like the most about that is just a beautiful haskama, a beautiful what he wrote in the beginning about this book. Anyway, let's see. Let's go further now. For the moment, let's go to the next time, Chazal.
By the way, this is not in the Ahulchah.
Right. It's in the Sogochar. It's in the Sogochar.
It's not.
Oh, hell. No, but if this word did not appear next to the word oylamim, then you would not say like that, because it's only mila'el when it's ohel, but when it becomes possessive, ba'olcha, your tent, then no longer is it called ohel, then it becomes ohelcha. You have the whole Kriya Sator, you have it like this. You have words that are generally mila'el. But when you add a chaf, then it changes the emphasis.
Right.
So in this case, if you just had the word ve'oholcha, you would have the major accent on the chaf and the minor accent on, but because it's juxtaposed to the word oylamim, and there's a messing under the ayin, no, you cannot have an emphasis on the chaf when there is an ayin that has a mesek, and you have to shove it back.
The reason here is the a-tol-ha.
With a patach?
It's not in
the... No, we have a mesek on the end.
This method is not, it's just to separate between aleph and a.
I'm telling you grammar. The trope makes the grammar, not the grammar makes the trope. truck. This is the everyone agrees that this word is the Yotze Min HaKlal in the Torah. The Yotze Min HaKlal, it's no messing with the Chaf, it's Ohol Chaf. You don't pronounce the Chaf with no stress on the Chaf. It's the Yotze Min HaKlal.
Look two lines before, Ba'atov.
Yeah.
You see the metric, but on the bed, it's...
But not on Ohol Chaf.
One minute. It's to separate between Ba'atov.
Correct.
You shouldn't say Ba'atov.
Right.
So that's why. And the same thing here, the Ba'atovha. You shouldn't
not read. You're right. I didn't say correctly. I didn't say correctly. Whenever this is what they told me when I was bar mitzvah. Whenever you have a word that has two things. It has trop, ta'ameh hamikra, and has the mesek. That automatically means there is a signal to give emphasis. A mesek is an indicator, emphasize this particular letter. The trop also is an indicator, emphasize this letter. Many, many times you have a word that has both a tam, a musical melody on one letter, and a mesek on another letter. Which one is going to be the main emphasis? So they taught me, is the trop wins. The trop is the winner. The trop is always the main emphasis. When you have a word and there is a ta'am, the ha'ameh ha'mikra, the ikor is the letter where you have the musical melody. If this word also has a neseg, a vertical line under a, you also give that other letter emphasis, but not with the same, emphasis. Now, I have to tell you something. We're dealing with Tehillim, and Tehillim, the Tameh HaMikra, I know nothing about that.
Right.
And I can't really comment correctly about what's going on in Tehillim, because the Tameh MS is Eoiv, Mishlei, and Tilim have their own set of rules. But over here, I don't know, but over here, if you notice that there is a melody, a note under the vase, and there is a mesek under the aleph. Now I'm just thinking that I don't even know what that melody is. I don't know. It's not your typical tipcha. It's probably a whole different set of rules than the symbols over here. We can't really draw exactly what they mean the way they're used in Chumash and Nevi'im and in the Megillah, because they're different. But notice there is a musical note underneath the vase, and there is a meseg underneath the aleph. Now, in this type of word, when you would have this type of word in Chumash, according to the pattern that we're familiar with, the ta'ameh ha'mikra would be on top or under the chaf. That's the way it is. That's the way it is, under the chaf. But notice that in this word, the Tameh HaMikra is underneath the vase. And generally, the Tameh HaMikra is the Ikor. And the Meseg is the Tosh. The word is Ohel. And you're right, it should say Ahal. So you're right. So over here, the Meseg is coming to separate between the Aleph and the Hey. Correct. So I was incorrect in focusing on the Meseg. I really should have focused on the Tameh HaMikra under the vase. Why is the vase here in the beginning of the word? And not, why is the musical melody at the beginning of the word, not at the end of the word? And the answer is obvious, because of another rule in grammar, that you cannot have two words back-to-back, juxtaposed, where the emphasis is next to each other. So the word oilamim, even though the trop is under the mem, but there's also a mesik under the ayin, which gives it a minor emphasis, that is not compatible with having any emphasis on the last letter of the previous word. That's all I want to say, is to appreciate this principle called Nosoig Ochor. And here it's a hard word to pronounce, V'Oholcha, and notice there's no emphasis on the Chaf, emphasis on the Vase and the Aleph. And the reason why that is so, even though it really goes against the grain of the Ta'ameh HaMikra that we are familiar with, is where a word with a chaf at the end usually has a tameh hamikra on the chaf, is because it's obvious, because the next word says oilamim. Once we're talking about this, this is the Rebbe Nafkimina in davening every single day. Mechaye Mason, is it Ata?
I'm trying to think of these places where they have the word Olam in, and how are we supposed to pronounce them?
Okay, Rabbi Yisai, look, you have to look at the whole picture. This is a very big, this is something we're going to talk about. Ata gibar li olam Hashem. Okay, mechayei meisim. How do you say the next word? Mechayei meisim ata or mechayei meisim ata? Ata. So it's machlokes.
Is it connected to?
Oh. Art scroll. Article is a contradiction. I always found this to be, I always want to ask them, call them Rav Nesa. Article contradicts themselves. Because article, really, it's a Mamash Apel what they do over here. Rav Pam had a complaint against article. He didn't like commas. He asked him, what are you putting commas? Who told you to put commas in the Siddur? The whole Siddur is full of commas. They have a million commas. After every single word, who told you to put commas? You know how to parse the Nusach HaTfilah? The Nusach HaTfilah can be parsed many, many different ways, and it's all subject to interpretation. Okay, so it seems that you're coming to Paskin by putting in a comma in specific locations. Yeah. You're giving a psak halacha, this is the way people should read the expression. Yeah. Who says you should do that?
Hold on. So, I want to go back to this word olamit. So do we say Adon Olamim?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you do. Adon Olamim, yeah. Olamim. When the trap is the ikar. But you emphasize the ayin. This is what they taught me when I was bar mitzvah. You have something just like this. Tameh HaMikra and a mesek. The ikar emphasis is the Tameh HaMikra. The secondary emphasis is the mesek. So if you just had the word Olamim alone, it would be Olamim. Okay, you have to give a little bit emphasis on the ayin, because the word Olam, if you just have the word Olam, it's Olam. Olam. It's Mila'el. But because the word Olam is not being stated in its purest form, it's being used in a binyan, we're making it plural in a certain context, so then the rules of trop come into play, and they take over. Not totally, but mostly. So it'll be Olamim. But it's not Olamim. You have to give the ayin, you have to preserve the ikar. A little, you have to practice a lot. It takes a lot of practice. Olamim. Ayin gets its limelight. Olam, because the word Olam alone is Olam. Olam. The Olam HaTere. Olam. And then there's Olamim. But that's not the word. In this context, we're adding the yud, the mem. Two worlds. Now let's go back, and this is a question to ask the editors of Art Scroll. I have no complaints. I always tell you that I should really wear on my jacket the logo, the Art Scroll logo, because I live and breathe Art Scroll. But I never understood this. I think this is mamish a contradiction in the Art Scroll Sidur. Mechayei meisim ata. They put over here a mesek. Who told them to put a mesek over here? And then they put a comma. Mechaye meisim ata, comma, Rav lehoshia. That doesn't make any sense in my little mind. What? If that's the case, so then it should be mechaye meisim ata, comma, Rav lehoshia. It's a contradiction. It's a contradiction. You want to say Mechaye Meisim Ata Givaldik, but then that means you have to, the Ata and Rav go Mechaye Meisim Kama Ata Rav Lehoshia, because Rav is only one syllable. Rav, it's only one syllable, which is, you cannot have two syllables back to back. Mechaye Meisim Ata Rav Lehoshia, Mechaye Meisim Ata Rav Lehoshia. What?
Oh,
ato.
You are
ato.
And also,
wait. So then, that means that this should, if you're going to put a comma or a period, a comma really here means a period, right? Then how would you pronounce it? Mechayei meisim ato.
Mechayei meisim ato.
ato? And a period?
A psik.
So if there is, if you, let me ask you guys, if you did not have the words Rav Lo Shia, how would you conclude? Mechaye Meisim ato or Mechaye Meisim ato? No, you're right. No, he's right. Rav Kalman is right. Rav Kalman is right. Mechaye Meisim ato is the end.
It's like if
otto
is the end.
Right, okay. Otto, okay, right. So why isn't it otto? Mechaye Meisim otto.
In various brachas, you see that. You can see otto, and you can see otto.
Otto, right.
In the same bracha.
Ephraim. When Ephraim is at the end of the pasuk, it's Ephraim. When it's in the middle of the pasuk, it's Ephraim.
What I mean is, you can shift the accent. You can have two different accents in the same bracha in Shmona Esrei, which is, are often misstated by the Baal Tefila. But usually it's ato.
When it's ato, Baruch Ato Hashem. There is no one that's going to tell you to say Ato. Okay, let's, of Kalman, when you say the Baruch Ato Hashem, right? How do you say that word? Baruch Ato Hashem. How do you say the word Ato? Ato. No one in the world will tell you to say it Baruch Ato, unless you're a chosid and you're trying lahachis to go do it wrong. You're doing it lahachis. You do lahachis. It's baruch outside by the door. Baruch ato Hashem. If you're going forward, you say you. It's called milara, evil. Milara, the end of the word. Baruch ato Hashem. So when you conclude mechaye meisim. Now we have a word that we have an aleph tough aleph a hey. And then we have the word Rav. What do you do? So if the word is going to be Ator Rav Lehoshia, then if you want to connect the word, if you want to connect it to the next word, then it would be Milara, Mechaye Meisim, Ator Rav Lehoshia. But if you want to stop Mechaye Meisim Ator, okay, then it's right. I made a mistake. I'm thinking about something else. I'm going to go all mixed up. But in the Chanami, that's why they put the comma here, L'chora. Mechaye meisim ato. By putting a mesig under the aleph and telling you to pronounce this word ato and not to pronounce it ato, by definition, they're telling you to come to a stop. There is a stop sign. Mechaye meisim ato. Because if the word ato will be pronounced mechaye meisim ato, that's like Baruch Ato Hashem, then you don't stop. Mechaye Meisim Ato Rav Lehoshia. But there's a problem with that also. And this already, I'm getting confused and I forgot. And that is, when you say Baruch Ato Hashem, how do you pronounce Hashem? Aleph Dalet Nun Yud. Where do you put the emphasis? On the Nun. Baruch Ato Ado, and you put the emphasis on the nun. You do not have two accents back to back. Whenever you have two accents back to back, that is a violation. The word Rav is only one syllable. Being that the word Rav is only one syllable, you have a problem of saying, even if you want to say, so here's the thing, even if you want to say, this maybe we're coming, even if you want to say, Mechaye Meisim Ato Rav Lehoshia, you can't do that. Why can't you do that? Because Rav is one syllable. So that means you're having, there's no buffer between two accents. You generally have to have, you cannot have in the Hebrew language a double accent. You cannot, you have to have a buffer of something that is not an accent. So let's say you would want to remove the comma, Mechaye Meisim, and you would want to say the word, like what you would regularly say, Ato Rav Lehoshia. That's a problem. You can't do that. Why can you do that? Because you cannot have Torah, Rav. Torah, each one is a primary accent, and there's no buffer between the two. So therefore, even if you would not have a comma or a period after Mechaye Mesim Ata, even if you would not, and you would want to go there, you still would have to go have the accent pushed back to the word Ata. Okay, everybody, again, I'm coming to ask you a question. This is a good time. Come and ask you a question. Why is it when you say in the first brach of Shmona Esrei, Baruch, every time you make it Baruch Atah, you never ever put the emphasis on the Aleph? It's always on the Tav. Baruch Atah. No one says Atah unless you're a Chosid. I don't know why they do that, but that Baruch Atah. You know why? Because what comes next? What comes next is Yud Kei Vav Kei. Yud Kei Vav Kei, where do you put the emphasis? On the third syllable. A, Do. The emphasis is on the Nun. Noi. So there is a buffer of A, Ta, A, Do. Two syllables that serve as a buffer between two accents. Tof, A, Ta. That is accent number one. And Noi is accent number two. What do you have in between accent number one of Ta and accent number two of Noi? You have two buffers, A and Do. No problem. Baruch Atah, A Do, and then comes the next accent of Noi. So you don't have two accents back to back. We have two buffers. So now, when you come over here, let's make believe that the proper way. Don't put a period. Don't separate between the word Atah and the word. Don't make a hard break. Don't put a period there. Don't make a psik. No, keep on going. Atah, you are Rav Lo Hoshia. Let's say you would want to say that is the pshat. That's the way you should read the Shemona Esrei. You would still have to say Atah. Because if you were to say Atah and then say Rav, it's Ta, Rav. There are two accents that are back to back. Therefore, now let's say it would be the end of a sentence. Let's say you would not put the word Rav Lo Shia as the beginning of a sentence, but you would say Mechaye Meisim, and the last word would be, at the end of a sentence. Then the rules are different. It would be Ata. Fine. Ata, at the end of a sentence. So even, you don't need a comma here. You don't need a... So this over here, this is a real sticking point. And then the next thing, which also over here, the article, they do a lot of chidushim here. Mashiv haruach ha-moirid, is it geshem or goshem? What is the main afkamina between geshem or goshem? If it's goshem, it's the end of a sentence. If it's geshem, keep on going. Don't stop. Don't slow down. Don't slow down here. Keep on going. So our article here, they contradict themselves. They write Mashiv Ruach Morid HaGeshem, and they put a dot. Why are you putting a dot? If it's Mashiv Ruach Morid HaGoshem, Adkan. New statement. Mechalkel Chayim B'Chesed. So there really shouldn't be a dot. A lot of people, so by putting dots and putting commas, you're playing around. There are a lot of siddurim. You look at a siddur, the first place to go look and see what's going on, what they're doing with the grammar, is to go look at Mechaye Meisim Ata and see what they do, if they put a comma, they put a mesek, and geshem and goshem. Today, almost every siddur puts in geshem. I don't know. But over here, they put in a dot. Mashiv haruch umayrid ha geshem. That, why is there a dot? It should be no dot. It's only if it's goshem would there be a dot. Okay, but you should know the truth is there are exceptions to the rule, because there are places of kesef.
Also, if you don't say marid hatol, then you are at a stop, right?
if you don't say Mechal Kol Chayim V'Chesed, Mechayim V'Chesed Berachamim Rabim,
I told Rav Loshia,
Mechal Kol Chayim V'Chesed.
You don't say Masha Baruch, and you don't say Morid Atol.
So then that's no, that's part of the question. And where then do you have a new stop? That also is part of the question. In the Mishnah, I think even the Mishnah Berurah talks about this, that if a person forgets to say Masha Baruch Morid Hageshem, where does he have to go back to where do you go back to? This is a nafkamina if you say Geshem or Goshem. If I'm not mistaken, the Mishnah Berurah says this, or maybe it's in the Dirshu. I learned this not that long ago. Big nafkamina, if a person you forget to say Ata Gibor Mechayim Eis Ma'ata Ata Rav Lohoshia, and you forget to say Masha V'Ruch, and then you continue, then you're in the middle. You have to Michal Mechbal Gibor Samida Melach. What do you do? Technically, you can. So do you go back? Do you go back to Ata Gibor, or do you just say it right away and then just say it right away, and then you continue Michal Kol Chayim B'Chesed? So if you learn that Mashiv Aruch HaMorid HaGoshem, it's an independent statement, you can really say wherever you want. Just say it in the middle of Mechal Kol Chayim B'Chesed. Wherever you are, just insert it. But if you learn that it's Geshem, so then it's part of the Nusach. It's Mechayim Esim Ata, Rav Lo Hishia, Mashiv Aruch HaMorid HaGeshem, Mechal Kol Chayim B'Chesed. It's part of the words. If it's Geshem, it's part of the sentence. If it's Goshem, it's an independent clause which you can just insert wherever you want. All right, we got sidetracked, but I'm not upset because this is something which we have to, it's good refresher, a good trigger to go and study this in much more detail, get a chance.
Some people daven wrong their whole life.
You have to learn grammar. If you learn grammar, it's a whole different davening. Parsing words is an amazing, amazing thing. It's an amazing. Have you noticed in newspapers? We don't even begin to realize how the mind works, and the psychology of reading. When you read, the way we read, I think we're really all messed up. You have a sitter. I mean, this is the way the Torah is. So you have to be very careful. You look even the art scroll. The words, you have a stream of words. And you have to know where to stop. You have to automatically, when you're reading even English, you know, there are periods, there are commas, there are semicolons, there are colons. There's a whole world of techniques to address the mind of the reader. Pause here, stop here. There's a chapter, there's a paragraph, there's a sentence, there's a comma, again, a semicolon, a colon. There's a whole world, parentheses, a whole world of commentary going on in your mind when you're reading very quickly of where to pause. Now, people don't appreciate this. The length of a line has a major, major impact on how you comprehend something. Right. When you read a book, how many words are typically on a line? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Over here, there are 9 words on this line, in this sitter, in this particular page. What would happen if you make a line, smaller letters or bigger paper, and you would put 20 words on one line? How would that affect your comprehension? What would happen if you have a column where you don't have more than 3 or 4 words per line? You would be amazed, beyond your wildest imagination, how it affects your comprehension for the good. Newspapers, did you notice, usually have very small columns? They don't have big columns. Do you realize how much easier it is to read? People are able to read newspaper articles much easier than they are able to read books. Well, I mean, it depends on the person. You can't really generalize. People get very good at it. But it affects your mind when a column is smaller. And what's really amazing, something like the Mitsudai Siddur. In the Mitsudai Siddur, they have little columns. Not only are the columns small, more than 3, 4, 5 words, it's parsed for you. It's been parsed. So each line is a complete expression. It's not just a comma. It's Oh, your mind sees a complete expression.
It's a sentence.
A sentence. And that's it. And that's all. You're not given the burden. Your mind is not given the burden. You don't realize how much effort it takes subconsciously. When you read something, your mind in the background is working without you realizing it, parsing the words you're reading. And when your mind is devoting resources to do the parsing, and when you're reading Hebrew to add nekudos, it takes away your ability to a certain degree to comprehend the message of what it says. Maybe you'll say just the opposite. Since the mind is now being forced to work hard, so once it's working hard and putting in the dots and putting in the commas and parsing it, memela, it's gonna, that mechanism is going to help you trigger to understand the comprehend what it's saying. Everyone is different. But there's a lot going on in the person's mind. And it's very interesting. If you take a flow of text and you yourself try to parse it, it is an amazing, amazing experience. I tried this recently a lot with Daf Yomi. Okay, so I take what I do. It's an amazing experience. It takes time, though. It takes a lot of time, which I don't have time for. You take a text, you go on Wikipedia, they have the whole Shas online for free. The whole Shas. You go to Wikipedia and you go copy paste the whole Daf. The whole Daf. And then paste it in a word or any your favorite text editor, and then just parse it, put on every line, not more than five words or whatever, parse into it, and you're gonna have to make a decision: where should I press enter to just present these words? The experience of taking a flow of text and parsing it is an experience like none other. And when you finish doing it, wow, I really know the daf. When I learn the daf and I read it from the Gemara and the text flows to the next line, and I read it and I think I understand it, you're fooling yourself. When you are forced, like when you teach, when you read a book, okay, so you read it. When you have to teach it, oh, that's a whole different madrega. When you have to take a flow of text and parse it, you're being challenged. And that challenge, it really affects you to comprehend the subject matter to a very significant degree that you otherwise would not achieve. Because, and then you realize, wait a minute, when I was reading it like the way I have it over here, and the words flow freely onto the next line, you're really doing that anyway, but subconsciously, but not with the same emphasis. And when you're forced to bring the subconscious into the conscious and do that, it's an incredible experience. If you don't believe me, try it. Even try with Chumash Rashi. You take a block of text and make it into what they have in the Mitzudoy Siddur. And parse the text. When you finish parsing the text, you're going to walk away, wow, I never understood this passage in the way, I was fooling myself my whole life. I read this 100 times, and I thought I understood this, and now when I'm forced to put on every line not more than a couple of words, wow, it says something entirely different than I ever imagined. So how come I never realized this until now? Well, you did. You were doing it subconsciously, but you didn't really pay attention. And then you begin to realize what the mind is really doing. And you know, it's with Nekudos is the same thing. I was in Tarvadas years ago, when they first started putting out Gemaras with Nekudos, Tuvius, before Art Scroll and Mesifta. I have a beautiful, now Mesifta, they have a whole Shas. The Oiz V'Hodah Shas with Nekudos. It's mind-boggling. But before that, I discovered, wow, when I read especially the Rashis, the Gemara, I didn't really find such a big difference. But I found, when I learned Rashi on the Gemara, with a Gemara that had Nekudos in the Rashi, it was like a new world. And I then realized that I'm very weak. And when I read a Rashi in the Gemara, my mind is probably spending most of the time subconsciously trying to put the dots in, and it's distracting me from being able to comprehend what it's saying. And then when someone gave me a Gemara that had the Nekudos in Rashi, and I was able to read to the Rashi like a breeze, and I was just devoting myself to understand what it says. It was mind-boggling. The experience was mind-boggling to me.
I want to tell you something. What's wrong with the tefillah and oh, I'll give you three examples. Don't correct me. Modeh ani lefanecha melech chai v'kayam shechzarta li mishmati v'chemla v'abba emunah. That's kindergarten. Another one. Hazan et ha'olam kulo betuvo lechem lechesed v'rachamim. Wrong. Again. מה נשתנה? שבכל הלילות אנו אוכלים חמץ ומצה, הלילה הזה, כולו מצה. Is wrong? All three are wrong. Because it says, הלילה הזה כולו מצה. כל הלילה. כולו belongs to be pleased. שחזרת לגיל נשמתי בחמלה, רבה אמונתך. And then, חזר את העולם כולו בטובו, כל העולם כולו. זה כולו belongs to the עולם, אינה, הקדוש ברוך הוא כולו בטובו. It's three mistakes because in the kindergarten, that's how they sing. And all of them are wrong. 100%. And then to undo it.
Impossible.
Almost impossible.
Impossible.
I sit down even today, sometimes when I do fast.
Right.
Okay, that's why it's so important to learn grammar. That is why it is so critical when you read a pasuk and you have something like this, there's a meseg underneath the aleph, and there's a tameh hamikra underneath the vase, and then there's the word oilamim, and there's a meseg under the ayin, and there's a snachta under the mem. Do you know what a world of commentary that is? You know what a world of commentary that is right there and then? Okay, and we just, we fool out, we just gloss over like nothing ever happened. There's a whole world. There's literally worlds and worlds of depth of understanding to understand the rules and to understand what's going on. And unfortunately, a lot of the Siddurim just make it worse. They make it worse and they do things that, so they don't know what they're doing then. They don't. Then they got a problem. Sorry to tell you, they got a big problem. It's one thing. I don't know what's going on. I was once in the chassid. I could not make out one word. They were the laning. I was there. The guy. I could literally. I was trying. So what is he saying? Could not make out a single word that the Baal Kriya was saying.
Why? You went to the wrong yeshiva.
Okay, I cannot. You can't say that this is Torah. You can't. You can't say this. Look, we the Litvaks have their own problem. There are a lot of things that we that you know the things that are, but there's a whole world of commentary, and that is being lost when you don't understand why is there a dot in this letter and there's not a dot in this letter. Why is there a sof? Why is there a munach here? Why is there? There's a whole world. There's a whole world to this, and unfortunately, we're not trained.
I bring one more sample that I told you about Rabbi Mayevsky. As bekol ra'ash gadol, adir v'chazak mashmiim kol. What does it mean? Who's adir v'chazak? Who are they? As bekol ra'ash gadol, adir v'chazak. Mashmiim kol. That's the correct way to read.
Say it again.
How many chazanim said that? They say it's
my chazan actually does that one correct. He keeps saying choshech, but I
asked someone in the young Gilchi always would tell me a million times. Shoychein. Is how do you go? Shoychein. So everyone. Shoychein ad kama mohoroim v'kadosh. He said, no, it's not shoychein ad. It's shoychein. Admoroim, the Kadosh Shemai. He had all these things. He would tell me all the nigunim, wrong. All right, you got to be careful. You got to be careful because the truth is, you got to be careful. The truth is, because sometimes there are other perushim. We think there's only one way to explain something. You have to get a little slack. you can't say everything we do is no good. You have to have some tolerance. And there are ayin panatar hanach lehem li Yisrael in einam neviim b'neidim. Let's just finish up with another chazal here. The Yerushalmi says the same thing but in different words. In different words, I'm over here in the Mamari Chazal on the very bottom of the page. I really want to go do the next page. It's very nice. But Yom al Yimei Melech, Taisif, Shnaisif, Kumari Dar Vadar. I thought we would do that today, but we're not going to do it today. We'll do it tomorrow. But look over here. Let's finish up another Chazal. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines from the bottom on the page 530. David Bikesh Oleho Rachamim. David was this the same exact. This is a very fascinating thing. Is when you have a Bavli and a Yerushalmi that say exactly the same thing. This is always the case. And they say it differently. Okay, there are a lot of parallels. Now the Olam is taking learning Yerushalmi, right? People learn Yerushalmi. I don't even know how the Aleph Beis. People learn, they go to the Dirshu Bechinas. They have now Dirshu exams even on Yerushalmi. Anyone want to take a Dirshu exam, 30 daf Yerushalmi every month? Unbelievable, right? So over here, yeah, when you have a passage in the Bavli, and that passage has an equivalent passage in the Yerushalmi, this is a lot of fun. If you're a real Talmud Chacham, analyze the two passages, and you will always discover they're not the same. They're not the same. Question, is the Yerushalmi a commentary on the Bavli, or is the Bavli a commentary on the Yerushalmi? In other words, when we learn in the afternoon, anyone who wants to join us, welcome to join us, we learn Rashi and Unkelus. So I always tell, we always learn with the principle, and I've told this to big, big Talmidei Chachamim, and they look at me like I'm from the moon, is it is clear as day, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that Rashi did not write a commentary on the Torah. Oh, how could you say that? Of course, it's right. Go learn Rashi with Unkelus. And you will discover Rashi wrote a commentary on Unkelus. It's called a super commentary. In the world of the secular world, when you write a commentary on a primary text, that's called a commentary. When you write a commentary on a commentary, that is called a super commentary. Rashi did not write a commentary. He wrote a super commentary. He wrote a parish on Unkelus. Rashi looked at Unkelus. And Rashi had an infinite amount of material to draw from. All the Midrashim, all the Talmud Bavli and the Yerushalmi, enormous amount of Choymer to use to comment on a pasuk. And if you notice, he always comments on something that he does not like about Unkelus. There's something...
What do you call a commentary on Rashi then?
A super duper commentary. If Rashi is the super commentary, so the Mizrahi is the super Mizrahi. Is the super duper commentary. Okay, so Rashi wrote. You study it well. You will always discover Rashi is bothered by a nuance in Unkelus. Even we had this week, incredible. There was a vav. A vav in Unkelus. Unkelus added a vav to a word. And Rashi comments on that word, and if you understand what's going on behind the scenes, and you look in the Ramban, what the Ramban says about this pasuk, and then you see what Rashi says, and you see what Unkelus says, oh! A light bulb goes off in your head. That Rashi, he could have said on this pasuk a million things. Nothing. There was one thing that bothered him. The vav in Unkelus. And that is why he made this comment. It's consistent like that. Mamish consistent. Okay, you can't say 100%. Rashi embellishes. You know, the first Rashi in Chumash. You're going to go tell me that it's because of what Unkelus. I'm not more. Rashi, maybe you'll say that also. I don't know how far you want to go with this. But it has to be at least 70% of the time. Would Rashi... What?
Prove you right. I was thinking right away, I ran to the Chumash here. Because I was doing on the Haggadah, Parshas Vayechi, when it says Mishomro Evan Yisrael, so Rashi goes ahead and says that Mishomro Evan Yisrael is a combination of the word Orvudain. And he goes, and you know what he comments about it? Because Unkelus says exactly those words. He touches up Evan Yisrael as Avosubonim. And so he says here, the Rashi over here says, Be Unkelus Afukat Targumo. He says, even Targum agrees with me.
It's a trigger. He's Rashi is heavily influenced by what the Targum is, either to support him or to disagree with him or to trap it with the Targum. He has all these different nuschos. All these nuschos how he refers to a Targum. And that's the starting point. I told this to a very big Talmud Chacham, and he looks at me like what are you talking about? What are you talking about? And I started giving him some examples. And I said, you know, got to think about this. It's as clear as day. So now, why am I telling you that? This is something which recently hit me hard. Did the people in Bavel, there were two competing Talmuds that were being written at the same time, pretty much. The Talmud Bavli in Bavel, and there was the Talmud Yerushalmi. The Talmud Yerushalmi was completed much earlier, and the Talmud Bavli continued for a much longer period of time. Rabbi Yochanan was the main author behind the Talmud Yerushalmi, and Ravina of Ashi were the main proponents of working on the Talmud Bavli, but of course it's much more complicated than just that, and it went on for a very, very long time. Question, is the Talmud Bavli a commentary on the Talmud Yerushalmi? Is the Talmud Yerushalmi a commentary on the Talmud? We are brainwashed.
It was published first.
Okay, the final version was a work in progress for generations. The Bavli went on for 500 years until it's the way it is today. The Yerushalmi was less, 200 years, 300 years. Okay, it wasn't published. It wasn't Yoytzei La'ar. It was in manuscript form. It worked. Question, now we're taught in yeshiva, we're brainwashed, Ha'iluchud v'ha'iluchud. There's a world of Talmidei Chacham that live in Yerushalayim and they're learning Torah with the Mesorah and they're doing what they're doing. And there's a world of Talmidei Chacham who live in Bavel and they're two passing ships in the evening. They have nothing to do with that. That's how they tell us in Yeshiva. And it's interesting for us now in the modern world in Tav Shin Pei Gimel to look what it says in the Bavli, look what it says in the Yerushalmi. Oh, machloik is azoy, and you see what it says, and it says over here and over here, and to make a beautiful pilpul, and look in Shulchan Aruch, and the Beis Yosef is coming to pass like the Yerushalmi, he's selecting this, we pass like the Bavli, this the Yerushalmi, this machloik is the Bavli, Yerushalmi. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's the way we've been trained. And if that's the way we've been trained, gewaldik. If I'm halach, I'm kabbalah, he in the kabel. Is that really correct? Or maybe it's not that they're two different worlds. Maybe one is a commentary on the other, or they're both commenting on the other. They each have in front of them.
I showed you, mentioned to you just one thing quickly. I forgot if it's in Megillah or Kedushin, near the end of Masechta Kedushin, I believe it is. The Mefarshim get into a whole discussion because the Talmud, the Bavli, disagrees with the Yerushalmi on Halacha, and the Yerushalmi and the Bavli says, the problem is, had we known what the Yerushalmi said, we didn't see it, because we didn't know about it, we wouldn't have said what we said.
That's subject to interpretation. That's an approach.
That's very interesting.
That approach, what you just said, is typical of what we learn in yeshiva.
Right.
They're two completely different worlds. Men are from Mars, women are from Venus. There's no connection. Who says they didn't see it? We find in the Gemara over and over that there was interaction. They went, they alu, this one wasn't Eretz Yisrael, they came to Bavel. We find in the Gemara over and over. They traveled. The Gemara numerous times, alu mi Bavel, and the Gemara just telling us one story. They traveled, their minds were brilliant minds, they knew everything, they came. Question, is it really true that the way they teach us in Yisrael, exactly what you said.
Well, how many times the Gemara says, Amru b'Marava, right? So they came from Eretz Yisrael, right?
Exactly. So is the Bavli, when the Gemara makes a statement, we typically are taught, they made the statement completely independent of what was going on in Eretz Yisrael.
Right.
Really? Maybe. Look, right when Rashi gives you a comment he doesn't mention the Targum 90% of the time. He doesn't say the word.
Right.
You read Rashi, and you wonder sometimes. You know, there's such a beautiful pasuk. You could have said a million things. You picked up on the small little detail. Come on, this is what you want to comment on.
Right.
And what's going on? And then you look in the Targum, and you look in the Mefarshim on the Targum, and you see they say, you know, the Targum. Why did he use this word here? All over he uses for this word, different translation. Oh, a light bulb goes off. Now I understand why Rashi made this comment. Because Rashi saw what the Targum said and he didn't like it. So that's why he made the comment. Like, it's so obvious. Did Rashi tell you that the Targum, what he said, it's obvious, the Targum. That's what I'm coming to comment on. So the Bavli, every time the Bavli says a few words, you have to go tell, in Eretz Yisrael they said this, so in Memela we're saying this, or when it says in the Yerushalmi they said this, so it says, it is the way we've been brainwashed is, there are two passing ships in the evening. They don't know, they don't care. They don't care. So unless the Gemara makes a big deal about it, if the Gemara doesn't make a big deal about it, they don't care. We're not goyris you. We're not goyris when you do your, when we do ours, we don't know from you. Rashi's not goyris. He doesn't say Targum every 2 minutes. He come on, never says. Very really Targum. Or no. It's like in the back of their mind, when the Gemara is making a statement, in their mind, the Gemara, the Bavli, you know, Eretz Yisrael, they say this. You know, maybe they're wrong. Maybe they're right. Maybe we should embellish what they said. Do you take into account a passage in the Bavli, what it says in the Yerushalmi? When we learn to him, the biggest problem that we're not doing, that's my fault, is before you read a pasuk, when you start off a mizmar and it tells you, oh, this was said in the story, in this particular story in Sefer Shmuel Beis Perikhes. So we should have in front of us the whole story and then read every single word in the mizmar. You see what it says over there. When you read a line in the Gemara in the Bavli, you should not be reading that line in the Gemara unless you have in front of you on the big board, on the board, every single word that it says in the Yerushalmi to see what they're doing. And likewise, when you learn the Bavli, the backdrop. You need the backdrop to the comment. Running out of time. So this is something, it's a delicate point, but it's a significant point. And the reason why is because over here you have exactly the principle of Sif Soysav Dovais Bakever. And guess what? It appears in the Bavli and appears in the Yerushalmi, and it's expressed in a completely different way. We just learned about David in this pasuk, Agura V'Aholcha Olamim, and here we quoted this Maimon Chazal in Mesechta Yevamos and Bechoros, and now we have a Yerushalmi that says the same thing, but a whole different world. Yerushalmi David Bikesh Olech Rachamim, Olech upon it. What's it? What was Mevakesh Rachamim? What's it? What does that mean exactly? The principle of living in this world after death. Sheyoymu Shmuoysa B'Shmoy. Agura V'Aholcha Olamim. Rabbi Pinchas, Rabbi Yirmiyah B'Shem, Rabbi Yochanan V'Chi. Olas Alev David. Shuchai L'Olam. He's going to live forever. Elam David. Eskeme I merit sheyu divorai. He doesn't say over here the divar shmua sheyu divorai neemorin al shmi. It should be said al shmi bebote kineisius bebote midrashois. What did it say in the Bavli? The Bavli said kol talmud chacham. It's a whole new a talmud chacham. Doesn't say that in the Yerushalmi sheyoyimu divar shmua mipir boil mazeh. It doesn't talk about the beis medrash and the beis haknesses. It's a whole different passage. Hold on, I'm going to see us. What benefit? Who cares? You're gone. You're in the next world. Who cares? if they're saying over your Chidushei Torah, or you really care when a person leaves this world? Do they really care what goes on in this world? Do they really care that someone says Yizkor for them? Do they really? No one came back to tell us. It's all Emuna. Emunas Chachamim. We don't know how this works. We have to have emun in what it says in Chazal. So the Gemara asked this question: Mo hon yolei? What hanah do you have from this? What, you know, there are people out there that don't believe in saying Kaddish, not in this generation anymore, but in the previous generations, Kaddish is for people that are Amaratzim, if you're an Orthodox Jew, you shem a Shabbos Torah, just live your life. You don't have to go and say Kaddish, and it's Mamela. Okay, we don't live like that today. You say that today, they'll shoot you on the spot.
That's when they say there's biggest chusim you can do for the nifter.
It's to be normal. It's what? The biggest chusim than that?
Yeah.
I heard the biggest chus you could have for the nifter is to it's to make a melchama. Who gets the omelet? The bigger the melchama. The biggest chus. You're fighting, we managed to insult every person in the shul, make a scene. Oh, and Shemayim, that neshama, mamish, Gan Eden, like you never had.
It's I don't care to get it down for me, I don't care to get it taken on my yard. That's another mindset
of that. Okay. So therefore, Mohanyalei. So the Gemara says, could you imagine every Havamina? Oh, it's so late, I can't believe this. Every Havamina in the Gemara, they always say, you know, every Havamina in the Gemara has MS. You don't say Tachnun on day 16 and 7, day 17, when it's 16 and 17, because every Havamina. So look at this Havamina. Mohan Yulei. Once a person leaves this world, they couldn't care less what goes on here. What benefit is there for someone saying over in my name, my Shmois? The Gemara says, Levi Baruch, by Nazir Omar, Kolo Omer Shemua. This is the Yushami. He says, come out the same words. Kolo Oimer Shmua Mishem Mishem Oimra Sif Soisav Roicha Sois Imoi Bakever. That's not what it says in the Bavli. The Bavli, it says Sif Soisav Doivivois Bakever. In the Yushami, it says Sif Soisav Roicha Sois Imoi Bakever. What's the chilek between the word Doivivois and the word Roicha Sois? Why in the Bavli does it not say Imoi, and in the Yerushalmi it says the word Imoi? I don't know.
They have a different language?
Obviously, it's more than just language. It's more. So here you have an example of a Bavli and a Yerushalmi. You think about this. You have a Bavli and a Yerushalmi. They both say something extremely similar. But not exactly. There's different words that have been selected, different nuance, a different context. Question. Is it that the Bavli just said this on their own? They live in their little world, and they're learning, and that's how they said it. And in the Eretz Yisrael, they said it the way they said it. And now, we today were very fortunate. We're geniuses, right? We have the Bavli. We have the Yerushalmi. We look at them both. Okay, they said it like this, they said it like that, and we can make a pilpul. Very nice. And they did not even know from each other. Or no, when we learn Bavli and Yerushalmi, we have to make the following assumption. It's a very delicate, small point, but it's a world of a difference. When the people in Yerushalayim made their statement, they knew exactly what they said in Bavel. And the people in Bavel, when they wrote that, how could it be? Who came first? The chick? Who came first? Well, Torah has a very interesting way of a different dimension.
Somebody changed it. There was one statement probably, and one of them.
Who says the one statement?
It looks like
it's a very different type of analysis statement when you know as a fact that the people in Bavel, when they wrote there what they wrote, they had in front of them what they said in Yerushalayim. And they deliberately read what they said, and we're going to say it different. And now either it's a commentary or it's a disagreement, like exactly with Rashi and Chungulus. Or no, we said it this way, you said it that way. What is the very big difference? If they didn't know from each other, then you can very much attempt to reconcile. They don't argue, it's really all the same. There's no chilek between the word roicha shoyz. It's really, there's less room to make a difference between the two. Because everyone has their own life. Every prophet has their own signoin. Every Navi has their own signoin.
That's what I'm saying, it's a different language.
But if you learn, take the approach, that when the Bavli wrote their statement, like a second edition, they knew exactly what they said. And they deliberately, again, if you want to see a really good example of this, I tried this once. It took a time to do, but it blew my mind like you can't imagine. It took an art, took an art school, the Schattenstein, the English, here on the shelf, English edition. Learned an Amud Gemara inside out with art scroll, every note. Then take the art scroll Hebrew Gemara, the blue. No. Take the blue. Try this. It's unbelievable. It is so obvious. How did they make the art scroll Hebrew? And they did this. They say, write up. How do they? The first thing they did was, before doing anything, they took a smart fellow who knows fluent Hebrew, of course, and he knows English very well. The first thing is, he took the art scroll English and he translated it. Wait. The first thing they did, it's so obvious, they translated it perfectly from Hebrew to English. Okay. What? From English to Hebrew. And then they look at the Hebrew after it's been completely translated. I don't like this. I don't like the way they explained it. Let's change a couple of words. This perish, this note, you learned the wrong pshat. You quote a Rashba, and the way you explained the Rashba, I translated it word for word. You didn't really understand what the Rashba said. I'm gonna change a couple of words here. This, I don't even like altogether. Out. And this, you're missing a major yisoy. You left out a major yisoy in the sugya. Let's add this. You know how popular the art school Hebrew is in Eretz Yisrael? You can't even imagine. It's in a world in the class by itself. You know why it's in the class by itself? Do you know the secret? Because it's the second edition of art school English. If they would have sat down art school to write an art school Hebrew Gemara and published art school, it would be, you know, a nice publication. I don't think it would have the praise and the esteem that it has. The reason why it is such an amazing thing, the art school Hebrew, is because it's the second edition. It's worked over, they invested in the English $40-something million. And then they just translated and they redid it. They chep it. They brought in Talmidei Chachamim and they didn't have to start from scratch to invent the wheel. To start from scratch, to translate it and then to give a note, it takes forever. It's already done. But now let's chepa. Let's dig in. And boy, did they dig in. And did they refine it to such a degree that they produced a product that's beyond belief. Now what they should do is they should make the English again. Take the Hebrew and go. And that would be a big hit. Okay? That's the question. That's the dilemma. Is the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, each one, a second edition of each other? Is the Bavli a second edition of the Yerushalmi, and the Yerushalmi a second edition of the Bavli, or each one is a first edition? That's the question. In Yeshiva, they taught us the Bavli is a first edition, and the Yerushalmi is a first edition. Who says? Maybe the Bavli is a second edition of the Yerushalmi. And that's why when the Bavli saw the word Reich HaShoyz, Imo, wrong, Doive voice. It's a second edition. If the Bavli would start off all alone, they would probably also say Reich HaShoyz. It's only because they're building upon something that they had. And likewise, in a whole different dimension, the Yerushalmi can also be a second edition of the Bavli. Or no, Hailuchud Vahailuchud. There's a beauty. You see, again, they teach us is Hailuchud Vahailuchud. I'm not convinced that's correct. I think they each one to a degree is a second edition of the other.
Both in the English and the Hebrew, they change it to Umra Lo, without the U. Look it up. It's 5 lines from the bottom, Omer Abba.
I don't understand.
In the Gemara, it says with the yud, leh, which is the opposite gender, back and forth. And both in the Hebrew and the English, it is law, without the yud.
They always quote the Gemara in bold, and then they translate it.